right, welcome to episode 3 of Yinz Are Ballin'. Craig and Brady here. Brady, let's get right into it, talking a little bit about the NFL playoffs championship weekend. Last week in the AFC, we had the Bills over the, sorry, Bills losing to the Chiefs 27-24, and we had the Ravens over the Texans 34-10. What do you think about this week's matchup between the Ravens and Chiefs based on what we saw last weekend?
I feel like it's going to be a nail biter. The Chiefs offense is looking better than they have the whole season. I think last week was the best their offense has looked the whole year. I don't know if you would agree with that, but I think it was even better than the Dolphins game they had with them. The Ravens also dominated the Texans. I was clearly wrong about that game. I thought the Texans were going to beat them in a nail biter, but the Ravens in the third and fourth quarter took control and they slaughtered them. So this week, I think it's going to be a very high scoring game, that's for sure. Both defenses are very good though. So I don't know how well that's going to play a factor in there. There's going to be I think look there's going to be each quarterback is going to throw a few picks because I think they're going to be aggressive because of the defenses. And I think the Ravens will hold it out though. I think America wants Lamar to win the game. And I think that kind of motivates him to like win it for America. So I'm gonna go with the Ravens, gonna beat the Chiefs 30-27.
Yeah, I think that everybody is kind of having a little bit of Chiefs fatigue right now. But that's what makes the Chiefs difficult to pick against because we saw it last week, we saw it with the Dolphins game that they're the champion you just can't put away. Just when you
Right.
think that the Chiefs may be done and their time is over, it's very difficult to beat the champion in the playoffs, and we see that with them. It's almost like they have a different gear, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but it's almost like they have a different gear that they go into in these bigger games. I think in this game, the key is going to be how much is Lamar going to run on the Chiefs defense. He's going to
Yeah,
get his
they
passing yards, so is Mahomes, but if the Chiefs can contain Lamar's running, then that creates a very different game than if Lamar goes for 70 yards on the ground.
And there, the Chiefs' defense struggles against the run. We saw that last week with James Cook. He ran all over them. So, I don't, but Pacheco was running pretty good too against the Bills. So, you never know. I feel like it's going to be a running battle too, honestly, because Gus Edwards has looked pretty good. Pacheco's obviously amazing. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be a really good game. Maybe the best playoff game.
Yeah, well, I think the Chiefs Bills game was the game of the weekend last weekend in terms of just from start to finish. I mean, there were a couple other close games, but start to finish, I think that was the most exciting game because you kind of had this sense back and forth in the late third, early fourth quarter that whoever had the ball last was going to win the game. And that almost came true in terms of tying the game, but those infamous words in Buffalo, wide right, came back to haunt the Bills again. As they did in Super Bowl 25 many years ago against the Giants.
The Bills' decision making at the end too was not great. Like I, they got lucky that fake punt didn't resolve in a touchdown with the Chiefs. They also like Josh Allen threw a perfect throw to Diggs that you couldn't make another that any throw better, and Diggs just couldn't hold on to it, you know. So they made a lot of mistakes that can't really blame the kicker there. I know it's a big mistake. I know everybody wants to blame the kicker, but in reality, like. Diggs has got to catch that ball. The coaching's got to be better in those situations. And I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to blame the kicker. I know everybody wants to, but
You know,
that
the
just
Bills
wasn't the
just have
case.
that feel of a team that just can never get over the hump. I'll give a couple historical examples of this. The Houston Oilers in the 70s were probably overall the second or third best team in football behind the Steelers and Cowboys, but they could just never get past the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl. You see that, obviously in the Buffalo Bills in the early 90s, the Vikings of the 70s, they were always in there. The Broncos of the 80s, they would always, get to the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. Cleveland in the 80s was
The
kind of the thing
Steelers in the
too.
2010s.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers of the 20 early 2000s had, they were more, that was more 2000s, like 2001, 2004, where they had the Patriots in front of them and they just couldn't get past the Patriots.
Yeah, I
And
said 2010s too, because it happened a few times in there too.
yeah, when you look at the Bills, they just have, to me, the making of a team that's window is almost closing already. They're going to have some major salary cap issues coming up this year. The question is going to be, what's going to happen to Diggs? Do you pay him a ton of money at the wide receiver? You're already going to be paying Allen a ton of money. Do you tie that much money up with two positions? Those are decisions you got to make as you start having more prolific players earning significant salaries under a salary cap.
They got to make a big coaching decision too, if whether they're going to keep Sean McDermott or not, because it's hard to let him go. I know he's had a very solid career in Buffalo. Like, obviously he's getting those winning records, but he in like ultimately he's not going getting them to the Super Bowl, you know? They've never getting over that hump. So I truly don't know. I would probably, if it was me, I'd probably move on with him, but I doubt that they're going to move on with him. I bet they keep him.
Yeah, I think you're right. And this is where I was going to bring this up later, but this is my jag off of the week pick. It's actually not a person or team, it's analytics. Because that was a perfect example of how analytics can fail people, where you start looking at the percentages of, does it make sense to go for it? Does it make sense for a fake punt? Does it make sense to go for it on a fourth and one? And I almost feel like coaches are starting to lose their way of coaching a little bit for by feel of the game rather than relying on all these analytics. Every time we watch a game on ESPN or one of the networks, you just always see these people pop up and say, the analytics say go for it. Well, you can't go for it every time, and you have to know what spots you can pick to be really aggressive and what times are not right for that. We'll talk more about another situation where that came up this past weekend, but the fake punt was ridiculous.
Yeah, they got lucky.
The timing of that and the situation, that is not a time that calls for a fake punt in the situation that they were in.
That might be one of the worst decisions in playoff history, and they're lucky they did not get hurt from that.
So I think as a coach, you have to sit back and you have to look at analytics and realize they're important because the data gives you an idea about situations in general. But we've seen this over the last 3 or 4 years with Brandon Staley in San Diego, or in I keep wanting to say San Diego Chargers, but
Los
with the
Angeles.
Los Angeles Chargers now. He's so aggressive on fourth down, and sometimes it works, but when it doesn't, it's catastrophic sometimes because he's going for it at his own 30-yard line. And if you don't get that,
You're
it's
screwed.
instant points. So
Yeah, you're screwed.
I think, you got to, as a coach, you got to balance that out a little bit more. I think that's not a Buffalo Bills problem as much as it is a league-wide problem when people start looking at that and analyzing it. So, but the Bills just have a feel for me of a team that just the window may have closed and they're not, they just can't get over that hump for whatever reason. And that hump for them is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, 100%. They just can't beat him.
All right, so you're going with the Ravens in this one this week.
Yep.
This is a tough one for me with the Chiefs just being the champions. I just think the Ravens are a better football team. I think they're a more complete team. I worry a little bit sometimes about their passing game and their receivers being reliable, but I think on the flip side of that, their defense is going to give Kansas City a lot more problems than the Buffalo defense gave Kansas City. So I like the Ravens as well.
But when you said about the receiving problems, you gotta look at like the Chiefs there too. They don't have, I know they have Kelce and Rashee Rice, but besides that, they have nobody. So like the Ravens at least have some reliable guys. Like Mark Andrews coming back this week. Zay Flowers is obviously a great young talent. OBJ is always gonna be reliable. Rashad Bateman's starting to come back a little bit. Like that, I know they're not as big names, but I feel like they're a little bit more consistent sometimes than the Chiefs, because the Chiefs only have two really good players and the rest is like a 50-50.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the biggest question that we agree on who the winner of this game is going to be, the biggest question is, what's the over under on what quarter Jason Kelsey's shirt comes off in the booth.
Oh, it depends how well the Chiefs do. I think if they come out and score on the first drive, that shirt's coming off right away.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's planning it already. It'll be interesting to see if he has anything to add this week now that that's already been established in the previous week. You got to always keep the, up in the ante a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes out maybe with his chest painted red now with the shirt off.
I wish that was the reason they showed Jason Kelce, but we all know the real reason why they show him. It's because Taylor Swift's right beside him.
Yeah, that's true. I think we all realize that. But
Yeah.
there is becoming a little bit of a question of who's the bigger star, Jason Kelce or Taylor Swift. I probably still Taylor Swift by a little bit, maybe.
Oh yeah, only by a little bit though, yeah.
All right, let's switch over to the NFC now. And two games last week, you had the 49ers struggling to hold off the Packers, but they did 24-21. And then the Lions kind of having a pretty solid performance all around and beating the Bucks 31-23. So as you look back at last week and kind of see how that plays into this week in this game, what do you see in terms of 49ers Lions?
The Lions obviously played very well against the Buccaneers. They kind of contained Baker very well, especially at the end. It's hard. Like, the Lions are playing very well right now, but I really just don't see them beating the 49ers. I know the 49ers struggled against the Packers, but I really think Kyle Shanahan's not going to play around this week. I think right out of the gate, Brock Purdy's just going to sling it. I think McCaffrey's going to run all over the 40, I mean the Lions. And I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but it's going to, I think the 49ers are definitely going to win.
We talked
The
about
score,
last.
go ahead, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think the score is going to be, I think the 49ers are going to score a lot. I bet they get 33 and the Lions get 24.
We talked about last week how a lot of Pittsburgh fans can identify with the Lions because of the Pirates
Right.
and just the eternal struggle to even be relevant. And I've been reading a lot this week on social media of Detroit for football here kind of becoming the adopted Pittsburgh team because of exactly what we talked about. I think the Lions are have the potential to give the 49ers a lot of problems under one circumstance. But it's a circumstance that I've seen come through a few different times this year in big games, which is Brock Purdy has not been as nearly as efficient in bigger games against different, more difficult teams than he has in the other games that the 49ers have played this year.
Yeah, we saw that against the Ravens, especially.
Saw that against the Ravens a lot, even against the Packers last week. He had a great drive that brought them back at the end, but he struggled for a lot of that game last week.
Right.
And, he's one of those quarterbacks too, where as teams have a little bit more time to plan and prep for him and the weapons around him, that does make it a little bit different. I think it changes things a little bit. Having said that, he gets Debo Samuel back this week, I think, which is a huge boost for him.
I agree with you there.
I think the Lions will make it close. I think going on the road to San Francisco is not going to be an easy trip for them. I think the 49ers will win it, but I think it will be a close one. But I'm going to be rooting for the Lions in this game.
Oh, same. Yeah, I nothing would make me more happier than seeing Dan Campbell go to the Super Bowl because I love Dan Campbell.
Yeah,
But
he's done a great job with that team for the last few years.
I don't know how you could hate any person on that team besides maybe CJ Gardner-Johnson because he's a shit talker, but I don't know how you could hate, like, I don't know how you could hate Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery is a nice guy. I don't know how you could hate any of them. They're just, most of them are very nice guys and they're a good team. They've played so many hard games this year and they've overcome so much. If they go to the Super Bowl, that'll be maybe the best memory in Detroit history.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, in this game, there was a report that came out this week that I guess Brock Purdy did an interview earlier in the season. And he had said that the 49ers had tried to get Tom Brady in the offseason to come in and be their quarterback for this year. And I think a lot of people were surprised by that. But, you know, I'm not really sure in which circumstance, other than maybe five or six teams in the NFL, Tom Brady wouldn't have come in and been the best option you have available because, I mean, he's probably the greatest quarterback of all time. So it doesn't surprise me, especially since Purdy was coming off an arm injury where people didn't know if he would be coming back at 100% of what he was before until, you know, pretty close to when the season started. So I wasn't really surprised by that. But I do think that this will be a really interesting game for the 49ers and for Purdy because, given the amount of talent they have on that team, if they win and go to the Super Bowl, people will see it as a successful year no matter what. Because if it does end up being the Ravens they play, they're probably going to be underdogs to the Ravens, especially after how the Ravens beat them earlier in the season. But if they lose this game to the Lions and with all the talent they have, their season almost becomes a bit of a disappointment. And you have to start asking the same question about them as we talked about with Buffalo, is can they get over the hump?
Yeah, it's true. It's a very good point.
I think 49ers win it in a close one like we talked about. So I think it should be two really good games this weekend, though. I do think at the end of the day, Cowboys fans won't like this, but I think at the end of the day, the best four teams are playing in the divisional or playing for the conference championships this weekend.
I agree with that too. Yeah. I think, honest, I'll say it again. I think this has been a very good playoff. I think all teams that are here deserve it. And I think I can't wait for the Super Bowl because I think all these games are so good that the Super Bowl is just going to make it so much better no matter what team is in it. I don't think it's going to be a blowout at all. I think they're all going to be very close games.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a good last three games of the NFL season.
Yep.
So let's switch over to a different topic now, which is the player awards, the NFL honors. So we're going to go through these, and I'm just going to give you the candidates for each, the five finalists for each award, and we'll talk through who we think should be the winner of each category. So we'll start with the most valuable player. So the five finalists here are Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, Dak Prescott, and Brock Purdy. So who would be your pick of those top five?
I don't think this is a hard choice at all. My MVP is Lamar Jackson, easily. They had like a what, 13-3 regular season record. Sorry, it might have been 13-3, 13-4. I don't
I
know,
think they were
but
13-4 with a loss to the Steelers at the end there.
yeah, okay. But he wasn't in that game. So,
Right.
but he has carried that team on his back the whole year. I know John Harbaugh is a great coach, but they would not be anywhere near the team they are without him. And he's shown it in the playoffs too. I know the voting's already been over since the playoffs, but he has led that team so far. And I think it's hard not to put Dak in that conversation, like with him, because Dak's stats have also been unbelievable. But at the end of the day, he can't get over the hump either. He's like the Bills, you know? And
Yeah.
Josh Allen, obviously, he can't get past Mahomes. So, who was the other two? Brock Purdy and who?
McCaffrey.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll talk about McCaffrey next because he's in one of my other awards. So, yeah, but I think Lamar's the clear MVP. I don't
I
think
agree
it.
with you. I think it's Lamar Jackson. I think it's not even close. I don't see anybody else even getting near him in the number of votes in that award. I think he will clearly be the MVP.
Can I follow along with what I was going to say about McCaffrey?
Yeah, so you want to go to Offensive Player of the Year
Yep,
next?
that is Christian McCaffrey. Listen to
right, do
this.
you
He's got 1,459 rushing yards. That's literally like 400 more than the second running back, I think. I don't even know who it is, but he's leading that category like so much more than the others. Almost 6 yards a carry. He's got 14 rushing touchdowns, but that's not all. In the receiving game, he's got 67 receptions for 564 yards, Just to show you, I'm a Steelers fan, obviously, and we used to have Juju Smith-Schuster. Guess how many Juju had this year? He had like 300 or something like that, I think. And McCaffrey had 200 more than him. And he's a receiver. And McCaffrey also had 7 touchdowns caught. So I think it's clear. You could argue Tyreek Hill, obviously. He had a phenomenal season too. But McCaffrey, he impacted the 49ers so much. And I know they all have like they have so much impactful players. They got Purdy, obviously, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Debo, Fred Warner on the defensive side too, Nick Bosa. But I don't think there's any debate. McCaffrey, like he's been perfect this year, more than perfect. Like I don't know if there's much more to say. He's literally been perfect this year.
So your other candidates, you've mentioned Tyreek Hill, Lamar Jackson's in that group, McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, and Dak Prescott. I
CeeDee
agree with
Lamb's
you.
also deserving too.
Yeah, I think your top three in that group easily could be McCaffrey, Lamb, and Hill. But I think Hill and Lamb are easily your two and three, whichever order you want to put them in. I think McCaffrey's clearly number one. I think we saw this year like what a full season of Christian McCaffrey can be, mostly healthy and with a top team that he's never had in his career.
He's amazing, dude. I hate when he gets hurt because it sucks because he's so good. It's so fun watching him. Especially, it's so hard going against him in fantasy football, dude. He just drops 30 every week. Like, it's
Yeah,
amazing.
he's definitely going to be one of the running backs that I think for that happens to most running backs where the wheels fall off at age 30. I don't see him having a super long NFL career because he takes a pounding and he does so much. He carries the ball so much between the receptions and the running attempts. So, but I think he's got a few more good years left in him where he's playing at that level. But I think clearly this year he is the offensive player of the year.
Yeah, I really hope he doesn't fall off like some of those other running backs, but we get to see him like play phenomenally at a young age, so I'm still glad we got to see him this year 'cause he was phenomenal.
All right, let's move to the defensive player of the year, where the five finalists are Deron Bland from the Cowboys, Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, and TJ Watt.
TJ Watt. TJ Watt has 19 sacks. That's the most in the NFL, I think. He's got one interception and he's got 68 tackles. Myles Garrett, I don't think he had one sack in the past. He might have had one sack in the past 7 games.
Yeah, I think that's the right statistic. I think he did have one sack in the past 7 games.
My runner up is actually for defensive player of the year. My runner up is actually not in the conversation. Can I like tell you?
Yeah, sure.
My runner up is actually Antoine Winfield Jr. from the Bucks.
I can see that. He would be a good
He
pick.
has gotten snubbed from the Pro Bowl, and just anything. Like he's the most underrated player in the league. It's crazy. I can look up his stats quick to just back it up, but he's got three interceptions this year. I think he had six forced fumbles, six sacks, four fumble recoveries, and 76 tackles.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he's not in that conversation either. And
And
like we've talked,
he's a cornerback, right?
he is a cornerback, yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure how he's not in the conversation. He's the best cornerback in the league.
Well, Deron Bland from the Cowboys has a lot of interceptions, and a disproportionate number of those interceptions have gone back for touchdowns that he's taken back for pick sixes. But he also gets beat a lot. And he's made a lot of splash plays in that regard where he gets the pick and he takes it back. But if you've scored six touchdowns but you've given up 10, you're still in the minus category there. So I agree fully that Winfield would be more deserving. I have just been shocked by the amount of agenda that seems to have been put forward to try to make Myles Garrett win this award when he's not statistically better than TJ Watt in any category. And we talked about this before, where all you hear about is analytics and statistics. This seems to be the one category where people are going against that. And, particularly the playoff game that they played in, Myles Garrett had zero impact in that game, and the entire Browns defense got lit up.
Yep. There's also another guy who should be in this. I don't know where the hell he is. Danielle Hunter from the Vikings.
Yeah.
He's got almost 17 sacks this year, four forced fumbles, and he's got so much tackles this year. I don't know where he is either. Like this is crazy. You got two of the best defensive players in the league not even on here.
Well, he's the victim of the Vikings not having a very good defense, number one, and not being a great team, number two. Because that's what a lot of these end up being. I mean, you see this in every category. There's, multiple Ravens, there's multiple 49ers, there's Cowboys. And it's just, I agree with you. I think these awards they don't always have the best players in them.
Who is the other candidate? I know you got Bland, Watt, Garrett. Who is the other?
Max Crosby and Micah Parsons.
Okay, their Raiders defense wasn't good either.
Yeah. But Crosby
But
is.
Crosby's a big name, so yeah, you got to put him in there, I guess.
But he also, like, so this is where it gets goofy, right? And if we see this with the Pro Bowl voting at times, too, where it's almost like you have that period of time where you do really, really well and you don't get acknowledged for it and you pay your dues. And then you get put on things when you're not deserving just because of your name after that. Minkah Fitzpatrick of the Steelers is a great example this year. There's no way in God's green earth he should be on the Pro Bowl list, but he was as a Pro Bowler. He had zero impact on the entire season, pretty much. But
Max
early in his
Crosby.
career, he wasn't getting those honors and he was having a huge impact.
Max Crosby has two less sacks than Danielle Hunter and two less forced fumbles and less tackles. There's my point stated right there.
Yep.
Right there.
All right, offensive rookie of the year. We have Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, Puka Nacua, Bijan Robinson, and CJ Stroud. This is a tough one.
Listen. I think Puka deserves it so much, dude. He had a phenomenal year, obviously. I just don't know how you can't give it to CJ Stroud. I really don't know. He led a Texans team that was what, 3-13 last year
Yeah, I think
to
three,
a
maybe 3 and 14.
playoff, to winning that division and making the playoffs and winning a playoff game with 4,108 yards while being out for two games and being concussed. 23 touchdowns and only five interceptions with almost a 101 QBR rating. I just don't know how you can't give it to that. Like, Puka was amazing, I know. Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan was just on a bad team, so you can't give it to him. His production was just limited because of that, and he still almost had 1,000 yards. That's crazy. That's insanely good for being on a team with the Falcons where he doesn't want your team to succeed and he plays the worst players. You got Kyle Pitts and Bijan and Drake London being used as decoys. And then Jahmyr Gibbs obviously was great. Puka was amazing, but I think you just got to give it to CJ Stroud. He was perfect as a rookie.
It's almost one of those situations where you have a 1A and a 1B. And unfortunately for Puka Nacua, I think it's clear Stroud is the 1A and he is the 1B. And then you kind of drop down to that next tier of being probably Jahmyr Gibbs, and then the tier after that being Laporta and Robinson. But I agree. I think that.
I'd put Laporta over Gibbs.
Well, the only thing about Laporta is as a tight end, you just don't see the same volume.
Yeah, I don't know. This year, I probably would have rather have Laporta over Kelce this year. Just by this year, I feel like Kelce was a little inconsistent, and it's kind of like the 49ers where the Lions have a lot of weapons with like Montgomery, Gibbs, Amon-Ra. They got Williams as a receiver too. He's not bad. Like I know Laporta didn't get as much production probably as the other two, but I think you'd rather have him as a player than like Gibbs because you have Montgomery already. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'd probably put Laporta just by this year over Gibbs.
Yeah.
I don't know
All
though.
right.
It's a coin toss, you don't really know, but I'd probably give it to Laporta as the third one.
All right. Let's look at the defensive rookie of the year. Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Joey Porter Jr., Kobe Turner, or Devin Witherspoon?
This is a really hard one too, because Jalen Carter was obviously really good. I'm gonna give it to Devin Witherspoon. He had Witherspoon had 79 tackles, two interceptions, one forced fumble, and six sacks, and he's a cornerback. Six sacks is a cornerback. So I mean, I don't know. I think he was definitely the best Seahawks defender this year, easily. I mean, their other guy, Tariq Woolen, he was in a big slump this year. He was not as good as last year. And Witherspoon, I feel like, really kind of helped that secondary because they were not great this year, but with him, he made them better. So I think he's the most valuable defensive rookie.
This one's going to be close because I don't think you have one person that just jumps out ahead of everybody else. Jalen Carter would have been my pick after the first 8 weeks of the season, but along with the rest of the Eagles defense, they faded so bad down the stretch of the season that I don't think it can be him.
Can't give it to him.
Their defense was just in turmoil. To me, it comes down to Witherspoon and Porter, and I think probably Witherspoon with a little bit of an edge, but. Porter also was, matched up against the number one wide receiver pretty much from every team from about the 6th week on. And he did a great job of just shutting people down and not even getting balls thrown his way, which is what a lockdown corner does. So I think it could go either way between those two.
Listen, if he didn't have as much flags as he did, I would probably give it to him. It's just, I feel like Witherspoon had a better stats.
Yeah, that's the one thing Porter has to work on. He has to work on not getting his hands into the equation so much.
Yeah, I'm not even, I love Porter as a Steelers fan, but like I feel like Witherspoon this year was a little better. But Porter, I think Porter's going to be great for us in the future.
All right, let's do comeback player of the year where you got Joe Flacco, DeMar Hamlin, Baker Mayfield, Matthew Stafford, or Tua Tagovailoa.
Baker Mayfield, easily.
So this is an interesting one. Go ahead.
So half of the people that ranked the quarterbacks for this season had Baker Mayfield in dead last. Let me tell you, he had almost as much yards as CJ Stroud. He had 4,044 yards, 28 touchdowns, only 10 interceptions, and a 95 QBR, almost a 95 QBR. He led his team to the playoffs when everybody thought the Bucs were going to come last in that division. Yeah, even they thought they were going to be worse than the Panthers this year. And led him to a playoff win over the Eagles, which America loved that because who likes the Eagles? And I just don't think, I know it's probably going to go to DeMar Hamlin because obviously he almost died on the field. And it would probably be the right decision to give it to him. But I think in terms of comeback player, Baker Mayfield deserves it just because of the hate he got last year and how much he improved.
This is where I think the NFL has not done a good job of handling these awards, maybe because I think Hamlin should get an award. I don't know that it should be comeback player of the year because his impact on the field this year has been very minimal.
Has he even played this year?
He has. He actually ran the fake punt last week, in the playoff game. The ball was snapped to him directly. He has had minimal impact. I mean, but if we're looking at this group, right? If you take Hamlin out of the equation, I 100% agree. It's Mayfield, but Hamlin's gonna win this award from an emotional standpoint. But I almost think he needs a different award, which is probably some kind of like I know they have the Walter Payton Man of the Year award, like for somebody who does the most with charity. But I think they need to recognize Hamlin as a it's almost like a lifetime achievement award, right? Because,
Yeah, it's an honorable award. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, he what he came back from to even get back on the field was historic. I think that there's that piece of it is just looking at honoring him in some way, but also recognizing that there are other people who came back and made more of an impact as a comeback player this year.
Yeah, I am. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, I agree with you. I
But
think Baker
here's a
deserves it.
funny question for you for all the conspiracy theorists out there. If it's really not DeMar Hamlin and it's DeMar Hamlin's clone, can you really make him comeback player of the year?
I'm not even going to answer that question.
I
I don't
All
know what
right, I
to
think we
say
all
to
know where we
that.
stand on that conspiracy theory of DeMar Hamlin having died on the field and then bringing back a clone to replace him. All right, Coach of the Year is the last one. So here your candidates are Dan Campbell, John Harbaugh, DeMeco Ryans, Kyle Shanahan, or Kevin Stefanski.
You either got to give it, in my opinion. I feel like the only two that would make sense is Dan Campbell or DeMeco Ryans. I think just because of the Lions' backstory, I'm going to give it to Dan Campbell. They had a 12-5 record this year, made the playoffs. They were the third seed. They have two playoff wins. I think you got to give it to Dan Campbell. I think DeMeco Ryans, Harbaugh, they did amazing jobs this year. Especially DeMeco Ryans. First, this is his first year as the coach. He brought in a good offensive and defensive coordinators. He turned around. He helped turn around that Texans team. I know CJ Stroud was a big part of it too, but DeMeco Ryans, like, it almost is like a young Mike Tomlin, where in which like Tomlin actually like was hard on the players and like was aggressive and stuff. Like I think DeMeco Ryans did an amazing job this year, but I think Dan Campbell's got to win it.
Yeah, I would also pick Dan Campbell. I think you got to go by the body of work too. And I think, what he did in Detroit and what he inherited and what he's turned that into over the last 3 years has been remarkable. To go from awful, which is what he inherited, to a playoff contender last year, to we are the number three seed and playing for a conference championship. And I don't know that anybody ever thought Jared Goff would be back in this position. Of playing for, and I think people thought that Jared Goff was simply a product of Sean McVay's offense for a year or two, and did really well in that system. But he's proven he's a lot more than that. And Dan Campbell to me has set the tone for that team and that entire city. I think DeMeco Ryans is well on his way to doing that in Houston. I think Campbell's just a little bit further along, and I think for me he wins the award.
Campbell feels for the players too. I mean, in the press conferences where they lose by like 1 point, you could see him tearing up every time, and it's like because he feels for them. He knows how it feels. Like he went 0-16. He was on the 0-16 team with the Lions. He
Right.
knows how it feels, and he knows how much the city deserves it. They deserve to go to the Super Bowl. They deserve these playoff wins, and he's a big impact of that turnaround. And he's just. He's really made a difference in that city. So I think he's got to win it 100%. He deserves it.
So Steelers news, just jumping over a little bit. We had a couple of things this week. Terrell Austin begin 2 year contract as the defensive coordinator, so they're retaining him. The search is on for an offensive coordinator. We've had some candidates there. Anybody in particular that you're looking at and saying, "Boy, I really want that person as offensive coordinator at this point?"
Cliff Kingsbury, I think he's a good OC. The guy from the Rams would be a good one too, Zach Robinson, because he does like the doesn't he do like the quarterback stuff?
Yeah, I think he would be my first choice, but I have a funny feeling with Raheem Morris being named the coach of the Falcons and them coaching together with the Rams. I have a funny feeling he's probably going to Atlanta with Raheem Morris.
I would not be upset if we got Cliff. I think he's a good OC. He's an offensive guy. I know he wasn't that good of a coach, but he knows what he's doing at the OC.
Yeah, I think that probably for me, him or Clint Kubiak, who I think has not been mentioned yet, but I think they're probably waiting to see what happens with the 49ers, might also be a candidate. So we'll see about that. Coaching wise, it's been an interesting week because for me, probably the top two names out there when this whole process started were Belichick and Mike Vrabel, and neither of them has a job yet. Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, that surprises me, especially Belichick not going to Atlanta. That was a big shocker. I think Vrabel honestly could have went there too. I was expecting either one of them to go to Atlanta, but I don't think it'll be long. I think they're just weighing out their options because they're
Yeah.
obviously both big names.
I think that Belichick's only interview was with the Falcons. So I think, the more it goes on, the more likely it seems to me that he sits out for a year. And
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
that very well could happen. Vrabel, I'm a little bit more surprised by, honestly, because Belichick brings a lot, right? He brings a lot of positivity to the table in terms of just number of wins, what he's done over his career. But we talked a little bit about this last episode. His last several drafts and player personnel decisions have not been good. And if he comes into a team and interviews and says, "Hey, I want complete control over personnel decisions and coaching,"
It's just not going to work out.
I think teams are going to pause with that a little bit and say, "Your previous track record here over the last 5 to 7 years doesn't really align with that."
Yeah, I don't think that would go well with a lot of teams, especially the Falcons.
I wonder if Belichick doesn't get a head coaching job, he's clearly going to sit out a year, in my opinion, and wait and see what happens next year. I wonder if Vrabel doesn't get a job, if he would be somebody's assistant or defensive coordinator or associate head coach or something. And that's a move I would make tomorrow as the Steelers. If he doesn't get a job and wants to coach, is to bring him as a associate head coach.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, a
I
couple.
would love to have him as a Steelers.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he would be a really good coach to have. And I really hope the Steelers start pressing the gas a little bit on bringing in some of these coaches that they need to bring in who are a little bit more talented. Because again, now we're on week two of the offseason and there's been really no additions made. And I think you got to start pressing those buttons sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So two quick non-football stories to talk about this week in Pittsburgh sports, and we're going to get a lot into this in the coming weeks when we start talking about March Madness and NCAA. Pitt pulled off a huge upset of Duke, and this was my other Jagoff of the Week candidate was the Duke fans who were very critical of the Pitt players celebrating after the game, after the Duke fans spent the entire game taunting the Pitt players. So I think that was a huge win. I think Duke has some holes in their team this year. I think the key with Pitt is going to be if they can hit their shots, they can play with anybody.
Their defense isn't bad at all. Like they're tough. They're gonna be tough to beat as long as they make their shots.
Yeah, so I think that they have a very interesting remainder of their schedule coming up because if they can play, with just a couple more losses, they can probably still make the NCAA tournament if they have a decent run in the ACC tournament. So these next 4 weeks are going to be critical for them.
Yep, I agree.
Let's talk about the Pirates for just a second. Huge news this week with the Pirates signing Aroldis Chapman. Obviously, he's been a great reliever for a number of years. The Pirates have a really strong bullpen now. The question I have is, how do they get the lead?
Well, they're gonna win games based on how well they do offensively, and they need more offensive players. They need to sign more 'cause their bullpen's not bad now, obviously with the signing of Chapman. Their pitching's all right. It's just they need to win games by scoring a lot, and they don't really have too much offensive power right now.
Yeah, I also think that before the season starts, I think their lineup is not bad. I think they can be okay. They may need one more offensive player. I think first base might still be in need, and bringing back somebody like Santana might be a Carlos Santana might be a good move there, just for another 1 year deal. I think they have to at least add one, if not two, more starting pitchers before the season starts,
Yeah, I
because you're
agree.
going to get Skeens at some point this season. I think he makes his major league debut at some point this season. It's not going to be in the beginning of the season, though.
But he'll definitely be in it, though. I agree with that. Yeah, they need two more pitchers at least, because I think they were like 21st or 22nd last year in most runs earned. So, yeah.
All right, so we'll start hitting the Pirates season a little bit more in the next few episodes as we get closer to the start of the baseball season. We'll kind of do a little bit of a position by position analysis and kind of look at where things are at. So I hope everybody enjoys their conference Sunday and conference championship Sunday. And I guess our picks are the 49ers and Ravens, but we're rooting for the Lions.
Yep.
All right, we'll see you all next week.